Shalom, welcome to SJTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery for Malka Bat Simcha, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Chasdai, Pesach Vansir, Harav Meir Kahana, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to our many questions from our great JTFers, I have to speak, of course, about the impending Iranian nuclear arms agreement. God forbid that it should be completed, but according to news reports, they almost have completed the arms agreement. We're speaking on Sunday night here. And they're just tying up loose ends, according to news reports, and they're going to make an announcement on Monday that they have a final agreement with Iran to enable Iran to develop nuclear bombs, because that's what this agreement really does, and to basically remove the sanctions while Iran is developing nuclear bombs. God forbid. Let's hope there's a last-minute miracle and that something happens to stop the agreement. God can do anything. You know, we as Jews are commanded to believe that up to the last minute, you never give up hope. You always hope for a miracle. You never completely give up hope, even if things seem hopeless. Up until the last minute, it's never completely hopeless because God can always turn things around if he decides to. But barring a miracle, it now appears as though there will be an agreement between the United States and other Western powers and the Muslim terrorist dictatorship in Iran. And what this agreement again does is enable Iran to develop the nuclear bombs. And that, of course, will set off, God forbid, a huge nuclear arms race in the Middle East. Every Muslim terrorist dictatorship in the Middle East will then have an excuse to go and develop nuclear bombs as well. And they will attempt, God forbid, to try to do so. Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Syria, Iraq, Jordan, Turkey are all going to begin a massive arms race to develop nuclear weapons, to acquire nuclear weapons. And they're going to say, we're doing this in response to Iran. We have to protect ourselves from Iran. So this is an unbelievable catastrophe. Now, of course, Barack Hussein Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John Kerry always wanted to enable Iran to go nuclear. They always wanted to create a situation where it would be too late for the United States or Israel to take military action to stop Iran. And, of course, if Iran has nuclear bombs, then arguably it is too late. We're not at that point yet, by the way, but unfortunately, this agreement, God forbid, is aimed at taking us to that point. And so, certainly Obama, Clinton, Kerry are all guilty. The Republicans like George W. Bush, who allowed Iran to develop nuclear weapons and who pressured Israel not to strike militarily, because in 2008, Ehud Olmert, who was the prime minister, then went to George W. Bush and basically asked him for permission to take military action against Iran, and Bush pressured Israel not to do so. So George W. Bush is also guilty. He's another criminal who is guilty. So we have enough guilt to go around in both parties. You have certain people who have warned and have been voices of truth during this time. People like Ted Cruz, people like John Bolton, who has been saying that the only way this can be stopped is through military action. And he's absolutely right. But the person most responsible for this unbelievable catastrophe, the person most responsible is Bibi Netanyahu. Because Bibi Netanyahu was prime minister in 1996, even in the late 90s, when Iran's nuclear bomb-making program was a small and easily attackable or destroyable program, easily. The Israeli Air Force in 1996 and in the 1990s, in the late 1990s, could have destroyed in an hour or two Iran's entire nuclear program. It would have taken an hour or two in the 1990s. Of course, since then, the program was spread all over the country and underground bunkers and all other types of things were done to make it much more complicated and difficult to destroy their program. Still, if military action were taken, they can still destroy enough of the program to set them back 5 years or more. which would, of course, be a wonderful and very necessary action if by some miracle the United States or Israel would do that at this time. But Netanyahu has proven that he's too cowardly and spineless to take any action. He's not going to take any action. He talks a lot and makes speeches, but does nothing. He's all talk and no action. He's the worst nightmare for Israel right now. A big bluff. That's all he is a bluff. And the Jewish people can't afford to be led by a bluff when they're facing the danger of nuclear holocaust. So Netanyahu is more responsible than anyone for this, because his people, his nation, is facing the prospect of a nuclear holocaust, God forbid. And he's exposing his people to this danger because he doesn't want to displease Barack Hussein Obama and because he doesn't want to displease the Israeli news media and other people in the Israeli establishment, including the heads of Israel's wimpy army. You heard me right. The wimpy Israeli army. The leaders, the generals there who are all leftists. And Israel's wimpy Mossad and so-called intelligence agencies, those self-hating Judenrat capos. He doesn't want to upset them because they don't want to attack Iran for one reason, one very simple reason. It might upset the United States. It might upset Barack Hussein Obama. It might encourage European countries to condemn Israel. And then if they travel, if these generals and other self-hating Jews that are running Israel's military and they're running Israel's intelligence agencies, if they want to travel to Europe or another country, they may get arrested for war crimes, they're afraid. So they're so worried. They're so worried about antagonizing Israel's enemies in foreign countries that they will expose the whole Jewish people to a holocaust so as not to antagonize the anti-Semites. It's so pitiful and so disgraceful and so treacherous that words could not describe this moment in history. Who has warned you about this? Well, unfortunately, sadly, I have to say, we're the only organization, the only movement that consistently warned about this for more than 20 years, since the early 1990s, for more than 20 years. We have consistently warned about this. The television programs we did on cable TV, the internet videos that we did, on our forums and everywhere else, and on SJTF, over and over again, you hear us warning about this. And we're going to continue to warn, and we're going to continue to speak out because we're obligated to do so. But we have been the only consistent voice on this. Yes, there have been Gentile politicians and voices like Ted Cruz and like John Bolton. Cruz and Bolton have really put Netanyahu and the self-hating, wimpy Jewish leaders to shame because they've been more pro-Israel than the Jews. What else is new? What else is new? The righteous Gentiles are more pro-Israel than the self-hating Jewish leaders that we have. And in Israeli politics, I would say that Moshe Feiglin has been the one voice who really has been telling the truth about this issue. Moshe Feiglin on this issue has been good. On this program, I praise Moshe Feiglin for taking the right stand on Iran and for explaining just what the danger is. So this is where we stand right now, a time of tremendous danger. Tomorrow, Monday, they may announce this agreement, God forbid. Let's hope that they don't. Let's hope and pray they don't. We still must speak out. We're not allowed to be silent. We still must do everything we can to stop this. If you'll notice this past week, we uploaded 4 different English language videos, all about Ted Cruz. All of our videos were about Ted Cruz, promoting Ted Cruz and trying to push his candidacy for president. And if there's one issue, one major, the biggest reason, I mean, there are a number of major reasons why we support Ted Cruz, but the biggest reason why we would support him would be this reason. Because a nuclear Iran can lead to a nuclear holocaust. And he's the one leader who has said that he is not going to tolerate it and that he would take military action to stop it. So, and I hope that we can trust him on that. I hope. I mean, he's, I know that he seems to be a consistent, honest, courageous leader, but who knows? He's still a politician. Who knows? I hope we can trust him on it. We're going to have to go with what we've got. We have to take him for his word. He does seem to be a person who follows through when he makes promises. So if you notice, we've been promoting him a lot. And one of the reasons we're promoting him is because we want to make sure he gets into those debates. Only the 10 top Republican candidates in the national polls will get into the debates. And Ted Cruz is not strong in the national polls. He's like in 8th place in the national polls. In the more important polls of the local or of the early primary and caucus states, Ted Cruz is stronger. Ted Cruz is stronger in Iowa and in South Carolina, for instance. And that's more important than the national polls, because those are the states that are going to vote first. But Fox News has decided that in the first debate, which will be in early August, they're only going to put the 10 top candidates on the Republican side who are polling, who have the 10 top polling positions, into the debates. In other words, there are currently 17 or 18 Republican candidates. Only the 10 top ones in the polls, in national polls, will make it into the debates. And in national polls, Ted Cruz is not polling well because he hasn't concentrated on building himself nationally. He's concentrated on the early primary and caucus states, which is the logical thing to do, and Fox should be making the decision based upon those local polls. But instead, Fox has decided the national polls, which are meaningless, that they're going to decide who's in the debate based on the national polls, which are completely meaningless. At this point in 2007, the overwhelming, not overwhelming, but the clear Republican frontrunner in the national polls for the Republican nomination was Rudy Giuliani. He was the leader. He was the frontrunner in every national poll in 2007. And in the end, he didn't win a single primary. He got nowhere. So national polls are not relevant at this point. But Fox News and the other news agencies have made them the criteria for getting into the presidential debates. And so Ted Cruz has to poll among the first 10 candidates. He has to be among the first 10 candidates. He's now polling, I think, on average, in 8th place in the national polls. He's stronger again in the local first primary and caucus polls. But in the national polls, I think he's in 8th place now. We don't want him to fall through the cracks, because it's easy in the upcoming polls to go from 8th place to 11th place and 12th place, God forbid, and then he's out of the debates. And if he's out of the debates, then his candidacy is in serious trouble. If you can get him into the debate with his tremendous debating talent, then you never know what'll happen. He can zoom up like a rocket, God willing, at least we hope so. So we want to really boost him and pump him up now in the polls. We want to boost him with as many videos as possible and strengthen his position as much as possible. So you've seen us do 4 different videos this week on him. And of course, we've done a similar number of videos in Hebrew. We're doing everything we can to stop this Iranian nuclear catastrophe. We're doing everything we can. We're speaking out. We're making videos. We're trying to influence people. And that's our obligation, to do everything we can. Of course, if we had been stronger all these years, we always said, if only we had $5 or $10 million. If we had $5 or $10 million, the Iranian nuclear program would have been destroyed years ago, because we would have had a mass movement, and we would have put so much pressure on Israeli leaders that they would have sent in the Israeli Air Force and they would have destroyed that program years ago. And Barack Hussein Obama would not have been reelected, in my opinion, if we had $5 or $10 million. Why? Because if Israel had destroyed, if the Israeli Air Force had destroyed Iran's nuclear bomb-making program in 2010, 2011, 2012, there would have been a temporary spike in oil prices. And that would have screwed up Obama's reelection campaign. There would have been a temporary spike in oil prices on the world market. That would have created a temporary economic problem. And that, I think, would have been enough to tip the election to Mitt Romney. Don't forget, Obama won with 51% of the vote. Mitt Romney had 47.5%, literally right in the middle, 47.5% to 51% for Obama. So a swing of 2 or 3 points and Romney would have won. And if the economy had faced a huge spike, and an Israeli airstrike on Iran would have led to a huge spike in oil prices on the world market temporarily. In the long run, it would be good for oil prices, and it would be good for economic stability in the long run. But temporarily, when there's a war like that against an oil-producing country like Iran, temporarily you would have seen a huge spike in prices, just in time for Obama's re-election. And I think Obama would have been defeated. So that's the unfortunate tragedy, that we didn't have the funds we needed to be the major force that we always dreamed of being able to be, so that we could take care of emergencies like this and alert the world. Unfortunately, we didn't have this ability, because we never got the budget we needed to do that. We warned a lot of people. We did a lot of videos. We have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of views for our Hebrew and for our English videos on YouTube. We've done everything we can. And it was our obligation to do it, and thank God that we did it. At least we've established, at least enough people have seen our message to know, so that at least they'll know that someone was warning all of this time, that someone was right from the start. It is important. It is important what we've done. And what we're going to continue to do is important. We need to work together. Every one of us is obligated. We're not allowed to be apathetic. We can't be silent. We have to speak out. Every one of us has to do everything we can. In Israel, we want to work with and support Moshe Feiglin in trying to alert the people of Israel to what's going on. And in the United States, Ted Cruz for president. We're trying to support Ted Cruz. Of course, the odds are against Ted Cruz winning. But the issues he's raising are important issues, and whoever is the Republican nominee, I hope, will be influenced at least by his message, at the very least. And of course, ideally, we hope that Ted Cruz will actually win. He does have a chance. The odds are against him. He's fighting an uphill battle, but he has a chance. It's not hopeless. If he somehow pulls ahead, if he gets into the debates and he somehow pulls ahead and he somehow wins in Iowa, you never know what'll happen. It's not hopeless. So, we're going to try our best. We're going to do everything we can. And may God help us. We need to pray, and we need to act. It is never a waste to pray and to speak up. You know, even when you seemingly lose a battle, it's never a waste. God knows what you did. And you never know when your prayers will be answered in some other way. It could be in the future, it could be on some other issue. You never know. May not even be in your lifetime, but your prayer, if you have a good, righteous prayer and you pray with sincerity and with all your heart, that is never a waste. Never a waste to do that. Your prayers are not ignored. Even if you think they haven't been answered the way you want them to be, your prayers are not ignored. And when you do good deeds, and when you speak out, and when you stand up for justice and righteousness, even if you lose the battle, even if you seemingly lose the battle, it is never a waste to stand up for the truth and fight for the truth. And we're proud that we stand up and fight for the truth. And so, we're going to fight this battle. We're going to do everything we can to fight a nuclearized Iran. And let's hope and pray that they don't go nuclear and they don't have enough ability to develop a nuclear bomb by January 2017, when the new president takes office. And let's hope that the new president taking office will be either Ted Cruz or at least another Republican who will be determined to stop Iran from going nuclear. If that happens, then we still have a chance of preventing this disaster. So it isn't over yet. It's not over yet, but the danger is certainly very, very grave. There's a very grave danger here, and we are fighting against the odds. But it isn't hopeless by any means. And we're not allowed to give up. You know, you're never allowed to give up. We're taught in Judaism, you know, in fact, the famous saying is that even if a sword is at the throat of a Jew, he still should pray, because you never know. Hashem could create a situation where even with the sword at the throat of a Jew, if that Jew prays, and the same thing is true for a Gentile, when I say for a Jew, because I'm speaking about what Judaism says. But for Jew or Gentile, even if there's a sword at your throat, you never know what Hashem might do to stop that person from killing you, or to stop, or some miracle that could happen to save you. To the very end, you should never give hope, never give up hope, and never say that there's nothing that can be done. Always pray and never give up hope. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't be realistic. Obviously, in certain situations, the odds are overwhelmingly against you. There are times when that does happen. In this particular case, the odds are against us, but I do think there is a possibility that we could elect a president in 2017 that will work to stop this. So we're not giving up by any means. And God, you never know, God has all types of ways and means of stopping things. So HaMashiach, the Messiah, could come before 2017 or before Iran goes nuclear. All types of things can happen. All types of miracles can occur. So we never stop praying, and we never stop working, and we never stop speaking out. We never stop trying to make this a better world. And I know that you, our fellow JTFers, understand that and have made our message possible so that hundreds of thousands of people have seen our warnings, at least, in Hebrew and in English. And that's very important, and a great blessing that you've made it possible for us to speak out and continue to make it possible. And we're going to continue to speak out, and we're going to continue to fight this and fight for the truth. We ask you to do four things for us. Number one, we need your prayers. Please pray that we succeed, and please pray that Hashem have mercy and prevent Iran from going nuclear, and that something be done to stop this. So we need your prayers, number one. Number two, when you see us put up Hebrew or English videos, please promote those videos. Please publicize and promote those videos. Share them, comment, like, favorite, everything you can do on YouTube and on Facebook and everywhere else to promote the videos. Please do so. That's number two. Number three, we have our great news pages in English and in Hebrew, jtf.org and hayamin.org. Comment on those news pages. Be active on those news pages. Check them out on a regular basis. And fourth, obviously we need your financial support. The more financial support we get, the more money we get, the more people we can reach, the stronger we are. And the stronger we are, the better the situation is. Because the more people we reach, the more people that are warned and informed, the better chance we have of somehow stopping this. The better chance we have of electing a president who will stop it in the United States, or the better chance we have of waking up enough Israeli Jews so that Israeli leaders will be forced to take action. Every check, money order, and cash donation sent to our post office box does make a difference. God bless the wonderful JTFers who have been generously supporting us on a regular basis. And if you prefer to do it through your credit card online for convenience sake, For us, it's all the same. That's fine. There's no difference. You just go to hayamin.org, which is our Hebrew main page. On top, there's a donate button. You click on the donate button, and you can very conveniently and easily make a donation through PayPal in several minutes. So that's our situation. It looks like an agreement is imminent. Let's hope that it isn't. God forbid, let's hope that it doesn't, that we don't have an announcement of an agreement. And let's hope this can be stopped. But in any event, we've got to keep fighting. And we need to fight as a team, and we need to keep speaking out. And if you believe that, you're in the right place. Help us, and let's work together to try to prevent a disaster, God forbid. Okay. Let's go now to our questions from our great JTFers, and we start out with Wandering Samurai 81, who asks, and I quote, "Andy Dick is a disgusting excuse for a human being, don't you agree?" Unquote. Oh, absolutely. For those of you who don't know, Andy Dick is a so-called comedian. He's Jew-hating scum who has made vicious anti-Semitic remarks. Made all types of vicious anti-Semitic remarks. He said all types of nasty things about Jews when he was speaking about Howard Stern. I mean, I don't like Howard Stern, but still, making Jew-hating remarks, of course, is the worst sin and crime you can commit because you're going against God's people. And he, you know, this is a guy, he knocks the Jews, this piece of subhuman filth. This is a guy who was repeatedly arrested for drug possession, for sexual assault, and for exposing himself in public. I mean, this is a lunatic. He's a pervert who exposes himself in public. He's an admitted, he defines himself as bisexual. He grabs, even on television shows, he grabs women's breasts and assaults and sexually assaults people. He was thrown off the, I forgot what the name of that show is, the Kimmel show on television. He was actually forcibly thrown off the show because he was grabbing the female guest and sexually assaulting her. On television he was trying to do this. And he pulls his pants down and exposes himself in all types of public places. He's been arrested for possession, of course, of cocaine and other drugs, and he's a drug user, and abuses alcohol, of course, heavy drinker. Just pure antisocial, anti-Semitic scum. Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, may his name and memory be obliterated. Thank you, Wandering Samurai. We go now to Joe Gutfeld, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, what is your view of the Confederate flag being taken down throughout the South? Can you curse the people who want the flag down, unquote? I'm against taking down the Confederate flag. I think that the people of the South have a right to fly the Confederate flag. There's nothing wrong with it. And I am against taking down the Confederate flag. As far as cursing, I'm not going to curse everybody. There may be some people who... There may be a few people involved who are dumb for dumb reasons, have been brainwashed or don't understand and want to take the flag down. I don't want to just curse everybody who's involved in this particular issue. But I certainly oppose taking down the Confederate flag. There is nothing wrong with flying the Confederate flag. And, you know, the same animals who fly flags of Muslim Nazi countries and the Muslim Nazis say that you can't fly the Confederate flag. I mean, come on. What disgusting, low-life hypocrites. Thank you, Joe. And we go now to Smash Islam, who writes, and I quote, comment on recent phenomenon of empty spaces and stores closed in Union Turnpike, Barnes & Noble, and Schwarzification of Fresh Meadows. Coincidence? Unquote. Well, I mean, obviously, when blacks take over neighborhoods, it does lead to empty stores, and it does lead to all types of problems. Neighborhoods in Queens, though, like Fresh Meadows, Forest Hills, and other neighborhoods that were once all Jewish middle-class neighborhoods, are actually not becoming black, as far as I can see. They're not becoming black. Those neighborhoods are becoming Chinese and Korean and Asian. Like downtown Flushing is now overwhelmingly Chinese and Korean. So I just don't see that. I mean, I see these neighborhoods becoming predominantly Asian. Now, in addition to Chinese and Korean, there are a lot of Muslims moving into these neighborhoods. That's true. You have a lot of Muslims from Pakistan especially and from other Muslim countries coming into Queens. That certainly is a very, very negative phenomenon. But I don't know what you would attribute empty stores to. I think the economy is not doing well. I think that the news media propaganda that says we're not in a recession is just a lie. I think that the economy is not doing well. A record number of people are not part of the workforce, and then they tell us unemployment, they give us ridiculously low unemployment figures, even though they admit that about half of all Americans are not working at all, are not part of the workforce at all. So who are they kidding? So I think the economy is in serious trouble. And of course, I think that There are changes taking place in neighborhoods that can adversely affect business in neighborhoods, especially Muslims moving into those neighborhoods. That is something that is happening, even though most of the people moving into these neighborhoods in Queens, in my opinion, most of them are Chinese and people from Eastern Asia, from East Asia, Chinese, Koreans, Vietnamese. And those people usually do not destroy neighborhoods. Thank you, Smash Islam. And we go now to Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, "Why do so many self-hating Jews respect Muslims more than Christians?" Unquote. Because self-hating Jews always defend the enemies of their own people. They are Jewish anti-Semites. They hate their own people. And because the Muslims are such Jew haters, they naturally are going to support the Muslims. They support anyone who's an enemy of the Jewish people. Anyone who is an anti-Semite, anyone who hates the Jewish people, you will see a huge army of self-hating Jews defending them, sticking their nose in their tuchus, up the Jew haters' tuchus, sticking their nose up a Jew haters' tuchus. This is all they do. This is what these self-hating Jews do. They are sick, cowardly, disgusting, vile individuals, these self-hating Jews. And they are Jewish anti-Semites. So because the Muslims are against Israel, because the Muslims are anti-Jewish, that actually is the reason why these animals will be more pro-Muslim. The evangelical Christians like Ted Cruz who support Israel, the self-hating Jews despise them. So this is just hopelessly, there's a large percentage of the Jewish people, unfortunately, who are hopelessly sick. Just hopelessly sick. Thank you, Chicago Jew. And we go now to Guns N' Roses fan who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, what is your favorite European language?" Unquote. Oh, I would say English because it's a language that I speak that I'm familiar with. I would say English. Guns N' Roses fan now writes, I assume that we, by the way, let me just state that there are some people who don't consider Britain and Ireland and English-speaking countries to be part of Europe. They don't think it's part of the European continent, but I consider Britain and Ireland to be part of Europe. So I would say English is a European language as well. Guns N' Roses fan now writes, "Who is Amira Haas? Many anti-Zionists like her, so I guess she's no good. God bless you, Ed." Unquote. Amira Haas is a self-hating Jewish anti-Semite, an Israeli Jew, who is a columnist for the Nazi newspaper Haaretz. Haaretz is an Israeli Nazi newspaper, owned. 25% of it is owned by German Nazis, by the same German Nazi newspaper chain that worked for Hitler during the Holocaust, during the peak of the Holocaust, his number one German newspaper chain. That newspaper chain, which still operates in Germany and is highly respected in Germany after having helped Hitler carry out the Holocaust and backing Hitler fanatically in World War II. This German Nazi newspaper chain bought 25% of the Nazi newspaper Haaretz. The German Jews who own and run Haaretz, these people, they have no problem working with Nazis and Hitler and Hitler backing Germans. This is not a problem for them. They'll back anybody against their own people. Jewish anti-Semites. And this Amira Haas, just to show you what a sickness, you know, she's the daughter of Holocaust survivors, and she completely supports the Arab Nazis, just as the newspaper Haaretz does. Haaretz and Amira Haas are like a Jewish version, a Hebrew version of Al Jazeera, or of the New York Nazi Times in Hebrew. Always against Israel, always supporting the Arab Nazis who want to destroy Israel. Always. And of course, because of that, Amira Haas has received all types of awards for journalism, for great journalism, from all these international organizations, all of whom hate the Jews. Oh, are they in trouble in the next world? Boy, what Hashem is going to do to them on Judgment Day. Both the self-hating Jewish anti-Semites and the Gentile Jew haters that back them. Oh, are they in trouble. They have no idea what a nightmare awaits them. Thank you, Guns N' Roses fan. And we go now to Lewinsky Stinks, Dr. Brennan Rocks, who writes, and I quote, discuss how moral relativism caused most Americans to support illegal immigration, drug use, and sodomy, unquote. Okay, that's the first part of the question. Well, moral relativism, which basically says there is no morality, everything is good. There's no good or evil. When I say everything is good, that's not exactly what they say. They say there is no good or evil. Everything is the same. There are no morals, there are no values, nothing matters. So, of course, in the end, they're going to support illegal aliens sneaking into the United States. Of course, they're going to support everything that's evil. It says in the Talmud, he who is merciful to the cruel will in the end be cruel to the merciful. And we've seen this over and over again. All of the moral relativists, all of the immoral moralists, the enlightened people, the progressive people, the news media, the Hollywood people, all of these animals who claim to be very moral and ethical and who are the most unethical, immoral beasts on the face of the earth, of course, they're going to say there's nothing wrong with being with illegal aliens coming into the country because they want to hire illegal aliens for lower wages. And there's nothing wrong with drug use. They themselves use drugs. And they don't even mind if their children use drugs. They give it to their children. And there's nothing wrong with sodomy. You know, they don't think there's anything wrong with anything. Of course, this type of philosophy, this type of decadence, is, as our great leader, Harav Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzaddik V'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo, as Harav Kahana always said, it's a very slippery slope. When you betray your principles, even a little bit, that's a slippery slope. Then you're on the slippery slope and one betrayal leads after another, one sin leads after to another sin, one evil act leads to another evil act. That's the way it works. Just as one good deed that you do, if you do a good deed, if you do a godly deed, a good deed, one good deed leads to another. When you do good things, one good deed leads to another, or at least makes it easier for you to keep doing good deeds. You have free will, you can change at any time for the worse, God forbid. But if you do good deeds, it makes it easier, it paves the road for you to do more good deeds, and more opportunities are opened up to you so that you could do more good deeds. If you do evil deeds, the opposite is true. One evil deed leads to another, and you go lower and lower and lower and down that slippery slope. And that's what moral relativism also does. Lewinsky Stinks now writes, discuss pastor, quote-unquote, Heibels. Well, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing him right, Heibels. He's the pastor of the Willow Creek Church. I mean, because I only read about him. I've never actually heard him speak. But I've read what he said and what his evil wife, Lynn Heibels, has said. They, of course, are vicious Jew haters. They work to destroy Israel. They support all the Arab terrorists. They work to destroy Israel. They are so-called evangelical Christians who are vicious anti-Semites and who hate Israel and hate the Jewish people and do everything they can to hurt Israel and hurt the Jewish people. Yemach shmam v'zichram shem reshaim yirkav. May their names and memories be obliterated. May the name of the wicked rot. And of course, by the way, you know, when they're bad on Israel, of course they're bad on the other issues. It wouldn't matter even if they were good on every other issue. If you're bad on Israel, that's it. You're doomed. I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee. God says that is the issue. If you're bad on that issue, you're finished. But we know that in almost all cases, when people are bad on the issue of Israel, they're also bad on the other issues. This so-called pastor, he supports amnesty. He loves Barack Hussein Obama. He introduced him at a 2010 speech where Obama was speaking about the need for amnesty. So he's just leftist scum. That basically describes him and his hideous wife. Thank you, Lewinsky Stinks. And we go now to Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, and I quote, "While in a black area of Philadelphia, I saw black kids throwing rocks off a train platform, not the subway, so I called the police. They endanger people below. What punishment should black kids that behave this way get?" Unquote. I think somebody who throws rocks off of a train station, that's attempted murder. You're throwing rocks on people. I mean, throwing rocks on the street from a train platform. You know, if that crashes, if a car is going by. People have been killed, by the way. This is something that has happened. People throwing from bridges, from train platforms, from other places, they've thrown rocks, and people have been killed because of this. There were people threw a rock on the car, I remember over 20 years ago. In fact, I was in prison when it happened. But I remember reading about it over 20 years ago in upstate New York, when I was being held in prison upstate, that animals threw rocks on a car, threw a big boulder on a car of an Orthodox Jewish woman who was driving. She was just driving her car, and they threw a rock on her car, and she was killed in a car accident because of that. She crashed the car and was killed. So if it hits a car, it can kill people. If it hits somebody on the head, it can kill people. I mean, these people, this is attempted murder. I think they should be shot on the spot. I think somebody that does this is committing attempted murder. I mean, I think the police should take their guns out and shoot them on the spot. But then again, we know in this politically correct era that people are not going to do that, but if Chaim Ben Pesach were running things, the police would do that. Thank you, Binyamin. And you know, I have a funny feeling that if the police did that, people wouldn't do that anymore. You wouldn't see black kids going up and trying to do that anymore. They would learn pretty quickly that you don't do. You don't do that anymore. Thank you, Binyamin. And we go now to Dr. Dan, who is the voice of reason, common sense, and logic. Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, 1. What is the Jewish perspective of couples getting genetically tested prior to marriage? Unquote. You know, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that question. I guess to genetically test to see if your prospective mate has diseases or other things because you want to have healthy children, or you may have a disease, or someone in your family may have a genetic preponderance to acquire certain diseases, God forbid. And if you marry somebody who has that same preponderance, then the chances of your children being sick or terrible things happening to your children, God forbid, may be high. I don't know. I don't think there should be a problem with that, but I honestly don't know the answer. I think we need to consult with a learned rabbi, a Talmid Chacham, on that issue. Dr. Dan now writes, and I quote, 2. Would you ever vote Trump over Hillary? Who wouldn't you vote for? Unquote. I'm almost certain we're never going to have to find out about that. I don't think Donald Trump has any realistic chance of winning the Republican nomination. Despite the polls, what the polls are showing, I don't think Donald Trump can win the nomination. But if somehow we had a scenario like that, I probably would vote for Donald Trump over Hillary. I don't like Donald Trump. I think he's dishonest. I think he's a megalomaniac, even though I agree with what he's saying on immigration now. By the way, in 2012, he said the opposite. In 2012, he attacked Mitt Romney. He said that Mitt Romney should have been in favor of a path to citizenship, and that Mitt Romney lost the Latino vote because he wasn't in favor of a path to citizenship. And Trump was saying, in an interview with Bill O'Reilly on Fox, he said that he's in favor of a path to citizenship for illegal aliens. So Trump was saying the exact opposite of what he's saying now only 3 years ago. Less than 3 years ago, in fact. He's a phony. In my opinion, he's a phony. But I do agree with what he's saying, and I still think he would be better than Hillary, even though I think he has almost zero chance of getting to the point where he will be the Republican nominee for president. Almost zero chance. And if he ever were the Republican nominee for president, he would lose in a landslide. But if you're saying, what if he were the nominee, then I would vote for him over Hillary, yes. Who wouldn't I vote for in terms of Republican candidates, even against the evil Hillary Clinton? I would not vote for Rand Paul under any circumstances. I think Rand Paul is just as bad, if not worse, than Hillary Clinton. I would not vote for Chris Christie under any circumstances. Ben Carson, who says that his goal is the same as Al Sharpton's, I wouldn't vote for him. Now, Ben Carson also is never going to be the Republican candidate for president. You don't have to worry about it, but I would never support him. As far as Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio, I'm not sure. I can't stand Jeb Bush. I can't stand Marco Rubio. But because of the Iranian situation, even though I don't think that they would take military action against Iran, I think they're less likely to support lifting the sanctions the way Hillary Clinton supports doing. So, you know, is it possible I would hold my nose and vote for Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio against Hillary? I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know. That would be very, very hard for me to do, though. I can't stand either one of them. But definitely not Rand Paul, definitely not Chris Christie, definitely not Ben Carson. There are some that I definitely would never support. Thank you, Dr. Dan. And we go now to Rashi, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, Ehud Olmert versus Netanyahu. Olmert at least hit Syria's nuclear reactor in 07. Do you think Netanyahu will act soon, unquote? Yes, I think that you're right when you say that Olmert on the issue of Iran was better than Netanyahu. He didn't make speeches. He destroyed, Syria had a nuclear program, and Olmert, without making speeches, without any warning, without bluffing like Netanyahu does all the time, he sent in the Israeli Air Force and he destroyed Syria's nuclear reactor. And that was it. And in 2008, he wanted to take military action against Iran. But George W. Bush told him not to. And so because Bush told him not to, he didn't. So, you know, what does that mean in the final analysis? I think it means that neither Olmert or Netanyahu would take military action. So they're probably about the same on that. But he did take action against the Syrian reactor. And this is, again, this is a leftist. Olmert is a leftist. But because he's a leftist, he feels he can do more. He feels he can get away with it because the left-wing media backs him up when he does certain things. That's the crazy, strange way that Israeli politics works. So sometimes the phony right is actually worse for Israel than the left. Sometimes that's true. One other thing. About Olmert. Olmert did not freeze Jewish building in Judea, Samaria, or Jerusalem. Jews were continuing to build, and many thousands of new Jews went and moved to Judea, Samaria, and to Jerusalem while Olmert was prime minister. Netanyahu has frozen all Jewish buildings. So on Jewish settlements and on Jewish building in Judea and Samaria, Netanyahu is much worse than Olmert. Netanyahu has expelled hundreds of Jews. Olmert tried to do one expulsion, and because there was vigorous resistance, he backed down after that. But Netanyahu has been much worse on the issue of Jewish settlements and on the issue of building in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. So, what can I say? So in that respect, Netanyahu is actually worse than Olmert, worse than the left. Now, Rashi asks, do you think Netanyahu will act soon? And the answer is no. I don't think Netanyahu will act. I think he's all talk and no action. Thank you, Rashi. We go now to EB22, who writes, and I quote, please discuss heretic, quote-unquote, author Ayan Hirshi Ali, who after growing up as a Muslim wants to reform Islam, unquote. Well, actually, I don't think that's what she's saying. I think she says that she has said that Islam should be defeated. She's an atheist now, and she's against Islam altogether. She's completely against Islam, at least unless she's changed, unless there's something that I haven't seen, but from what I've seen, she says that she's against Islam at all under any circumstances, and she's now an atheist. I mean, obviously, I agree with her about Islam, but I disagree with her atheism. That's basically what I would say. Thank you, EB. And we go now to Black Sabbath, who writes, and I quote, why did so many Japanese terrorists join the Palestinian, quote-unquote, movement in the 70s, e.g., the Lod Airport Massacre, Black September, etc., unquote. I don't know if there were a lot of Japanese terrorists who joined them, but there were some. Of course, the Japanese terrorist who murdered the Jews and Puerto Rican Christian pilgrims at Lod Airport in Israel. That was a Japanese terrorist who did that. That is certainly true. And there were other. The Japanese Red Army did work together with the Arab terrorists. There was something called the Japanese Red Army. Look, you have communist, demented communist people, even in Western countries, even in Asian countries, who decide to become communists, and they decide to work to destroy Israel and decide to work to help the Muslim Nazis who want to destroy Israel. That's something that you, it's a phenomenon that has existed, that has taken place in the world, and that you see exist, unfortunately. Thank you, Black Sabbath. And we go now to Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, "Would ISIS exist if the U.S. had never invaded Iraq?" Unquote. I don't know. I think possibly, but certainly the invasion of Iraq increased the strength of ISIS because Saddam Hussein's former supporters have joined ISIS. The people who supported Saddam Hussein, including his Iraqi army people and other Sunni Muslims in Iraq, they've joined ISIS now. And they're one of the main forces that are backing ISIS right now. ISIS, by the way, you know, the term, I think we should refer to it as Islamic State. They don't want us to use the term Islamic State. They don't like that term Islamic State. But when I say they, I mean the other Muslims. The other Muslims say, oh, you shouldn't. Don't call that Islam. It is Islam. They represent true Islam. And I think we should refer to them as the Islamic State. And certainly the invasion of Iraq certainly exacerbated the problem. Gimatria now writes, an Israeli told me that those with no IDF service shouldn't criticize Boozer Rabin. Thoughts, unquote. Anyone who does not condemn Yitzhak Rabin, Yemach Shmo V'Zichro, Shem Rishayim Yirkav. Anyone who does not condemn that mass murderer who slaughtered 16 Jewish heroes on the Altalena from the Irgun Svayi Leumi, from Etzel. Anyone who does not condemn Rabin, who is responsible for the murder of 1,800 Jews in the Oslo agreements, because he started the evil Oslo process. Anyone who doesn't condemn him has Jewish blood on their hands. That's my opinion. And I mean, there's no doubt that Rabin endangered Israel's very existence, and that Rabin's actions led to the murder of large numbers of Jews. And the natural consequences of his actions endanger all of Israel's, endanger the survival of all of Israel. Chas v'chalila, God forbid. Thank you, Gimatria. And I want to thank everyone else for another program that I very much enjoy doing. Until next week, shalom.